Welcome to the Pediatric Anesthesia Journal's Featured Article of the Month podcast for April 2024. My name is Dr. Debnath Chatterjee, and I'm one of the journal's education editors. This month's featured article is an editorial entitled, "Will This Journal Exist in 5 Years' Time?" It is my distinct pleasure to welcome the author of this editorial and our editor-in-chief, Professor Andrew Davidson, who is a pediatric anesthetist at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, Australia. Welcome to this podcast, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Dave. It's a joy to join you here, and thank you for doing these podcasts. They are really fantastic, and they're listened to by hundreds, if not thousands of people, and they're a fantastic addition to the journal. So thank you.
You're welcome. So let's get started. Tell us what prompted you to write this editorial.
Well, as editor-in-chief, from time to time, I reflect on the strategic direction of the journal. And it was occurring to me that there are so many changes in the publishing world at the moment that many authors and readers are unaware of, that it would be a good opportunity to try and condense them all into an editorial to give some people a snapshot of how the journal is actually changing and what the future might look like.
I completely agree. I learned a lot just reading this editorial. My first question is, it looks like the transition from print journals to online journals has resulted in several changes, both good and bad. Can you elaborate on the major changes and what is your preference? Do you still read from the print journal?
It's changed in many ways. In fact, if you go back and think, why did journals start in the first place? In the late 1600s, people would write an article, they'd send it into the journal, they'd think, yeah, that's interesting or not. They'd bundle them together into an issue, they'd print the issue, and then people would buy the issue. And so that way the journals worked stayed pretty much the same for 350 years without much modification at all. But the intranet has completely disrupted that, and it's disrupted it in a number of different ways. The most obvious way is that you don't need to print run anymore. You don't need to bring the articles together and put them through a printing press and then sell them. That means you don't really need issues anymore. You potentially don't even need page numbers. It means that the articles is no longer a restriction in space. So in theory, the articles could be as long as you like. And it could mean that you could actually publish more articles because you're not restricted in how many can actually fit into that particular issue. It's changed the look. So instead of people flipping through journals in the tea room, or one gets delivered in the plastic bag, which often was never opened, to your doorstep, that doesn't happen anymore. You don't flick through the journal. So the articles in the journal are discovered by and large by people who search through various search engines looking for what they want. There are some journals which still you can actually physically flip through online by flicking the screen. But increasingly, it's the individual article which is found. So that changes what you put in the journal. You don't need to fill in white space. And it means that you don't need to put articles necessarily next to each other because they'll be discovered other ways. So it fundamentally changes the look of the journal and the way that people use the journal. Is it good? Well, I still love having the paper copy in my office. One entire wall is a stack of journals from over the years that I refuse to throw away because one day I might actually find something useful in there. So yes, I like the new look, but I'm still attached to the old print version.
That makes sense. The next major drive for change has been open access and how that has disrupted the journal publishing industry. What are your thoughts on the rise of open access journals, and how should we steer clear of these predatory journals?
That could be a whole seminar about open access. It's sort of interesting. It's much more popular in Europe and Australia, where everybody thinks that open access is inevitable. In fact, many funding bodies here in Australia, our government funding body says, you have to publish your papers open access. There's no question. In the US, there's still a perception that open access is a bit of a fad and it might just sort of go away and it doesn't really exist. So there's this huge divide in the world about those that have accepted it and are pushing it and those that still think, well, it's a bit of a fad. I think the truth is probably somewhere in between, and the full impact of open access, we haven't really realized what it means. A couple of reasons. One is a general anxiety that when you do something in science which is paid for by the taxpayer or by the grant agency, then it should really be in the public domain, particularly if you're experimenting on patients who have given up them some aspect of themselves to be experimented on, that should be in the public domain. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is that authors are beginning to realize that if they publish open access, more people read their stuff, which means that it gets cited more and it gets downloaded more. So the authors are realizing it's actually good for getting information out there, and the funding agencies are saying it's sort of the ethical thing to do. Of course, there's no such thing as a free lunch, so it still costs amount of money to actually publish it. So rather than going from the reader directly to the author, which is what open access does, that doesn't quite work, because that means that institutions now have to pay huge amounts of money to publish their work rather than to read the work. And that can lead to inequity. So if you're in a small institution, you may simply not be able to pay to publish your research. It also has an impact on quality. So previously, you had a product which you sold, and people would buy your product if it was good quality. Whereas open access slightly disrupts that now, and the journals now want authors to publish their stuff rather than people to read their stuff. It's not quite as simple as that, but it has disrupted the economic drivers behind quality, which we're still trying to figure out what that means. And one thing that's led to is the rise of predatory journals, where there is no peer review. They don't care whether you've got ethics or whatever. They often hide how much it's actually going to cost you. It's very hard to define a predatory journal, because some would say that's just good business practice. So there is a spectrum for those which are still very principled in what they do to those that are completely unprincipled. And there's a whole bunch of journals that sit somewhere in the middle. So it's quite difficult to say that's a predatory journal or that isn't. But if you get an email from them starting with the word greetings, that's usually a predatory journal.
That's great advice. Thank you. In your editorial, you also mentioned the idea of publishing research discoveries on institutional websites instead of traditional peer-reviewed journals. Is this idea catching on? And if so, can you share some examples?
Yeah, it's still somewhat theoretical. If you think about it, people discover your work by searching for it on the internet. Now, if you put it on your institutional website, it'll still be found. So why send it to a journal which will then charge you or charge the reader? It's like cutting out the middleman. So the institution can be responsible for peer review. The institution can put it up in a way which is easy to read. And then you don't have to pay. If you cut out the middleman, in theory, it's cheaper. Now, this hasn't really caught on, partly because authors still like to see their stuff in a journal. People like their journals, and there's a certain hierarchy amongst journals, and people like to be in the higher impact journals. So there's still some anxiety about giving up the idea of journals altogether. Some institutions, for example, the institution I work at, if it's a government-funded grant, we have to upload the paper onto the institutional website. So it's already happening. It's not very sophisticated. And I just went to our institutional website and I couldn't actually find where they all are. So clearly there's a bit of work that needs to be done, but it is an interesting possibility for the future. Of course, it does have problems with equity, because if you're from a big institution, then people are going to go there preferentially. If you're from a small institution, then people are less likely to trust the research and less likely to find it. In publishing, there's always a problem of equity.
That makes sense. You also discuss how journals are becoming author-centric and are focusing on improving the author experience with rapid reviews and refer-on options. This seems to be a good thing. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on this.
This is partly driven by the open access model, where journals are attracting authors. It's partly driven by the increased competition. There's lots of journals now, so they're all competing for authors. But I suspect it's also partly driven by a new generation of junior researchers who have a slightly different attitude. And there are still some journals where you feel like they sort of enjoy rejecting you, and they enjoy being the boss, and the reviewers enjoy ripping your paper to shreds and making you feel as if you have to sort of crawl across broken glass to be considered to go into your journal. And then they sort of kick you and throw you out again, and you're supposed to thank them at the end of it. Now, they're obviously exaggerating, but that sort of attitude is going. And now authors are more respectful of authors, and they're realizing that the authors have the product that the journal wants. So to get that product, it makes a lot more sense to actually be author-focused rather than trying to make the authors suffer as much as possible. So I think it's a good thing. Of course, you can be too author-focused, which means you become a predatory journal, in which case you don't really care what the author is saying. You're going to take it with no review at all, provided they pay their money. So there is this balance between being author-focused and respectful, but at the same time, being prepared to stand up for quality and being prepared to say to the authors, no, you are spinning your results. You know, you can't say that. By and large, I think it's a good thing that we're more author-focused. And I hope pediatric anesthesia is.
I hope so too. You mentioned peer reviewers. My question is, how can our listeners get involved in the journal if they're interested in being peer reviewers?
Email me or find one of the section editors at a meeting and say that you're interested in peer review. And then we can add you to our peer reviewer database. And we also have a small number of peer review fellows, so junior faculty who are interested in becoming reviewers, where we link them up with a section editor and we basically mentor from through the process. This is still very early on and we've only had our first three or four, but it seems to be quite successful. And by the way, most other journals are doing the same, where they have reviewer entry programs or reviewer fellowship programs. Reviewers are a valuable and rare commodity. All the journals are after them, and all the journals struggle with finding new peer reviewers, particularly if journals become very siloed, where the particular section editor uses the people they know and they're reluctant to use people they don't know, then you run the risk of ending up with these sort of silos that persist over the years in journals. And all journals have that problem. So finding new reviewers contacting us, particularly if they're from diverse backgrounds, is good for the journal and it's good for the science.
That makes sense. Finally, I would like to discuss the actual submission of manuscripts to the journal Pediatric Anesthesia. What is your advice to our listeners who are interested in submitting manuscripts?
Read the instructions to authors. Make sure, if it's a research paper, that you have a very clear research question and that the research question is obvious right through the paper. We call it line of sight. Is there a question? Does the methodology address the question? Do the results reflect the question? Do the conclusions reflect the question? That's the most important thing, is to have a clear line of sight all the way through the paper. The other bit would be get someone to read your paper. Often authors, certainly when I started, you're a bit defensive about, you're afraid, you know, it's my paper and you're a bit afraid what other people are going to say if you give it to them to read. Now you've got to get over that and give it to your colleagues and say, read this. Is it clear? Help me.
That makes sense. Thank you so much, Andrew. This has been a lovely discussion. We appreciate you taking the time to chat, and we look forward to many more years of this excellent journal. This wraps up our Featured Article of the Month podcast for April 2024. Follow us on X at PD Anesthesia. Please join us for next month's Featured Article of the Month podcast. Until then, cheers.
Bye-bye.